Imagine being told that you won't survive without a new heart, or you won't ever see again without new corneas. Imagine knowing that your entire future depends on somebody else donating those organs, but that the chance of that actually happening is extremely slim. That is the reality for thousands of South Africans who find themselves living suspended lives, waiting for an organ that might never come. Around 4,000 people are on the waiting list at any time. Yet less than 1% of South Africans have registered as potential donors. If it was you or your loved one, wouldn't you do anything you could to change those odds? Welcome to A Gift of Life, a podcast series that examines the subject of organ donation in South Africa and asks what we can do to improve the chance of a second chance for those patients. I'm your host, Pippa Hudson, and over the course of this series, I'll be sharing stories of organ and tissue recipients, donors and their families, as well as the doctors, transplant coordinators and other professionals who help turn one family's tragedy into another family's greatest hope. I hope we'll address many of your questions around organ and tissue donation and perhaps inspire you to sign up as a donor yourself. So many of our guests have hailed the transplant coordinator as the hero in the transplant story. But who are they? What do they actually do? Today we'll find out as we welcome to the podcast Mulalo Mofemadi, a heart and lung transplant coordinator at Groote Schuur Hospital. She's a registered nurse who moved into the transplant team in 2020. Mulalo, thank you so much for joining us. How did you actually end up doing the job of a transplant coordinator? Can you tell us a bit about the path that led you here?
I started working in Groote Schuur in 2017, and before then I was working in the infectious diseases department. So the coordinator that was working in the transplant before then had retired, I think, after 20-something years of working in the transplant department. So I was working in infectious diseases, and it wasn't as challenging for me as I would have loved it to be. So I got the by word of mouth from the supervisors here in the ICU department that they were looking for a transplant recipient coordinator, and I was when they approached me, they asked me if I would be interested in the job, and I said that can you please send me the description, and then they sent, and then I went through it. I said, this is something that I would like challenge myself in doing. So that's how I got into transplant.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what that role actually entails?
So my role is I am a lung and heart transplant recipient coordinator, which means that I look after patients that are going to receive and that have received heart and lung transplant organs. So for the patient to be referred to us for transplantation, like they must be going through and end stage organ failure.
Right.
So everything medical and any other procedures have been tried and failed. So my role in this is we do when they refer to us, we do an assessment to check the suitability of the patient. That is transplant the right option, treatment option for this patient. So, but I don't do it alone. I've got doctors that I work with. I've got dietitians, physiotherapists, social workers, because there is a criteria that we look at before we actually offer someone a transplant.
Right. That's really interesting. So it's a very thorough screening, because obviously you want that precious organ. We know there's so few of them available. You want to know that it's going to someone
to the right person,
with the best possible chance of success.
Healthcare workers that are working with the transplant transplantation. We have the responsibility to the donor.
Yeah.
And the donor family to make sure that we're giving it to the right person who will look after it. And if they need, if things are to go wrong or they need assistance, they'll be able to let us know and then we'll help them in time.
Mm. Can you tell us a bit more about some of the criteria that you'll look at? I mean, for example, the fact that you've mentioned a social worker tells me it's more than just, is this person medically a match for this organ? You're obviously looking at much more than that.
Yes. So there's a criteria that we go through. First of all, some of them include medical procedures, like doing a cath to make sure that the heart, the lungs are functioning well, lung functions, just to make sure. Medically, we'll have to look at all the other organs to see that they're functioning well, and if they are not, is there any reversibility to that?
Yeah.
So the other thing that we look at is the weight of the patient. If they're obese, then we'll have to work with them to lose weight.
Yeah.
Because a person's lifestyle does not actually exclude them to having a transplant. So there are things that we can work with until the patient gets to the optimal point where we can actually transplant them. We also check if there are any there's any history of malignancies like cancers. If there have been, that could also be an exclusion to transplantation, because after transplant we put them on immunosuppression, which can later, like when your immune system is suppressed, there are things that go wrong, like cancers can grow and you are prone to infections.
Right.
So if there's a history of cancer, that can also be an exclusion. So also patients that have got diabetes, uncontrolled diabetes with end-stage organ damage, they can be excluded. Not that patients that are diabetic cannot have transplant. They can, but if it's well control and have not caused any other damage to other organs in the body. Yes. So also socially, so when we send them to the social worker, her assessment includes support, because support is very important after the patient has had the transplant. He or she is going to need a lot of support, at least for 3 to 6 months. They're going to be very dependent to their support system. So the other thing that we look at is substance abuse.
Right.
If the patient is a smoker, we need to know. So, and then they need to have stopped smoking for at least 6 months for us to put them on the transplant list, either heart or lung. And active substance abuse is an absolute contraindication.
Right.
The patient needs to go through rehab, and then they must have stopped using substances completely. So those are some of the things that we look at. And obviously, we also look at the virology and the serology. Unlike what people knew from before, thinking that, okay, being HIV excludes them from having a transplant, it's no longer the case. We do transplant to HIV-positive patients.
Really?
We just have to optimize them and make sure that they're getting, like, top treatment, proper treatment, and they are virally suppressed. Not a one-day or one-week type of assessment. It goes, it can be longer than that, because there are other departments also that we need to include, like physiotherapy. They need to look at the frailty of the patient, because this patient has got an end-of-stage organ failure, so they might appear to be frail or not too active because they can't do certain things. They cannot walk as much as they used to, so they we need a proper form and a formal assessment to be done by the physios, and then they can let us know how much the patient can, in order for us also to predict the outcome of the transplant.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Patients that are underweight, we work with the dietitians, we put a peg in, we supply them with supplements and feeds just to optimize them and to get, like, good outcomes for after transplant.
So it's a really complex process to make sure that you are sort of trying to guarantee the best possible likely outcome of the operation. Now, Malalo, obviously that depends on organs being available to transplant in the first place. Do you have any interaction at all with the donor family side of the process?
So As a recipient coordinator, I'm not in contact with the donor families.
Okay.
I don't approach families and speaking to them about donating organs. We have two coordinators here in Fortescue that does that for us.
Okay.
So we work closely with them, but we have no interaction with the family as the recipient coordinators.
Malala, we know that people have a lot of misconceptions around organ donation. They have concerns around transplant processes and what's involved. And there's a lot of misinformation out there and cultural beliefs that might make people hesitate about going through with a process like this. Do you ever come across those in your line of work?
Yes. First of all, let me just say that the challenges that I have working in this field is we have patients that are waiting for organs and watching those patients slip away every day and dying on the list while waiting for a heart or a lung or a kidney or a liver. It's devastating emotionally for the family and for us as healthcare workers that are working in transplant, because we had given them hope that they're going to get a lung, they're going to get a heart, and after that they will live a relatively a normal life after they've gotten their transplant. So we have patients that are waiting for over 2 years for a heart, because it's even worse for us for heart and lungs, because we work with deceased donors.
Yeah.
Unlike the kidneys and the livers, in some cases they can do living-related donation, you see.
Yeah.
So watching those patients die on the list while waiting for organs, it's quite devastating. And it's true that it's true, people, that there are misconceptions out there.
Yeah.
Like people have doubts that if I give my organ, how sure am I that it's going to be given to the right person? How sure am I that that person is going to survive? Some families think that if they donate, they're going to get paid. And when you tell them otherwise and then they withdraw, they think there's monetary remuneration from donating someone's organ, which is not true.
Yeah.
And it's all in what the media portray out there. But I can tell you, with working with all the units in South Africa, there's transparency. There's a registry which shows you which lung was donated on this day, or which organ was donated on which day, and it went to which person. Like, there's so much transparency and trust amongst one another. We are guided by their guidelines, and there are organizations that look out through for these things. So there is no selling and there is no conspiracies that we do when it comes to allocating organs here in South Africa or in the Western Cape, if I can put it. Yeah.
Malala, obviously we need to do a lot of work to raise awareness of the need for organ donation, to try and get our donor numbers up, to try and counteract those misconceptions you've just referred to, and encourage more people to have the conversation about considering it. Does that extend to medical professionals as well? Obviously you're working in a team who are highly aware of organ donation and transplant surgery and all of the things that can be possible if organs are available. But is there enough awareness in the medical profession beyond your unit? Would you like to see more being done to educate doctors all over the country to be more aware of the possibilities that lie within organ donation?
Yes. At the moment, our donor coordinators are doing a great job doing that.
Yeah.
Because people, to be honest, before I joined the transplant unit, I was also very unaware, or I knew very little about transplantation. And when I got to it and I found out how many things or how many types of organ can actually be transplanted in or how many lives you can save through organ donation, I was amazed.
Yeah.
You know, so it just made me realize that there isn't enough information filtrating, even though I mean, I worked in Fortis Care, but I was not much aware about transplant.
Yeah.
But things have gotten better now with our donor coordinators actively involving other departments and doing displays on our main hospital floor just to make our colleagues and patients much more aware of organ donation.
Mm.
And the other thing that I know that they're working on, we're working on something they call early trigger, where the doctors and nurses that are working in the ICUs and emergency units are able to identify potential donors much more earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It was happening, but it was not happening as off as it is now. You know?
That's really encouraging. Malala, then my final question. You've spoken about the toughest part of the job, that you watch patients slip away waiting for an organ that never comes. But on the other side of that is the successful surgery, that you do have patients who are on the list and an organ does become available. It must be very gratifying for you to see the difference in their lives. Would you maybe like to just comment from that perspective on the part of your job that I would imagine must be one of the happiest parts, seeing a person walk out of your ward who came in there on death's doorstep and is given a second chance at life?
Yes. That is the most exciting and most satisfying feeling, Pippa, to see a patient who was on a wheelchair, a patient who couldn't take himself to the toilet, a patient who couldn't eat enough just because of their illness,
yeah.
And now they've gotten this organ. If it's a child, because we have children, we've got teenagers, and we've got adults who are like a family man or a wife who couldn't like look after her kids because she can't do much because she's sick. So after they've gotten an organ, after she's gotten that heart, after she's gotten those lungs, she's able to do much more after she's gone home to her family. She's able to be a mother to her kids. She's able to walk. They hike Table Mountain, my patients, some of them, after they've had transplant, you know. They go back to school and be a normal teenager and be a normal kid at school, you know.
Yeah.
And not miss classes because she has to go to hospital. She's got another infection. She has to stay in hospital for another 2 weeks. So they lead a normal life again. Yes, they have to be on medication for the rest of their life, but they're on medication, but they feel better and they feel good. And every time they come to follow-ups, we are so grateful to see them doing so well and looking after the organ.
Yeah.
Very well, yeah. And such patients, people are the ones that also create awareness to the other families, to the other patients about transplantation and organ donation.
Thank you for listening to this episode of A Gift of Life. Please check out our website, capetalk.co.za, to follow the series in full and make sure you don't miss an episode. And I'd really like to encourage you to share these episodes with your own family and friends. Help start the conversation about organ donation in your circles of influence. If you'd like to register as a donor, please visit the Organ Donor Foundation on www.odf.org.za. It's a quick, easy, and free process, and it could save 7 lives.